take you out.
Well, during our Christmas special last month, we did a segment called Prayer Request. What miracle do you need this Christmas? Very rarely do that on the show. I don't know. I guess I've grown up with so many Christian media outlets always sort of doing the prayer request thing. And I guess, to be honest, if I was more spiritual, I'd probably do it more often. But at Christmas time, I always think I'm sensitive to the fact that people are down. There's some issues going on. There's struggles. There's battles. So we threw open the phone lines and had a number of people pour out their hearts. And it was quite touching. I can still remember that day. But one gentleman phoned named Tom, and he said, my wife really needs a liver transplant, and she's been waiting quite a long time, and it's not looking good. And he was pretty emotional about it and shared. And so, you know, you folks, the listeners of the Drew Marshall Show, prayed for Tom, and then Tom sent us an email a few days later saying, guess what? We got a liver, and the transplant's going to be happening. And so now they're joining us here in the studio today, and I want to welcome both of you. Thank you very much for making the big drive in from Hamilton. Yes, Hamilton.
Yeah.
Steel worker.
Yep. That's it.
How long have you been working there for?
It'll be 36 years.
Good for you. Yeah. And are you a working lady as well?
Normally, yes. I'm a working lady. I've been off for a year, and I work for a financial planning company.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to going back.
Going back?
Yes.
Little plug for them?
Wentworth Financial Services, Inc.
Gotta love that. Yes. All right. Well, I mean, look, the journey segment is simply, you know, it's like we're sitting around having a coffee and hearing your story. And so I know nothing about you guys other than the fact that this miracle happened. And we hear about miracles on the other Christian media outlets quite regularly, but this one touched me because it was part of our show. And Tom, when you called in, you were distraught. Yeah. You were pretty, this was overwhelming you. Did you think you were going to lose your wife?
Actually, no, never.
Really?
I really never did. I had a good feeling all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was one of those I trust God totally things?
Yeah. She's been in and out of the hospital a few times, and every time she's been in, I never worried. I always knew she was coming back.
Wow. Yeah. That's huge.
It's huge.
You've got more faith than I could ever dream of. It's amazing. So what's the medical journey here? When did you start realizing your liver was not working the way it needs to
work?
Well,
I was diagnosed in 1996. And I didn't really have any symptoms until 2000. So once that started, things started going downhill. But it's actually since September of this year that I really started crashing. And there are various symptoms, but everyone has different things.
What were you diagnosed with? What was the diagnosis?
Primary biliary cirrhosis.
And how did you know that things weren't working? What were the symptoms?
Well, I didn't know, except I'd gone for just an annual medical, and my blood work came back
a little wonky.
Kind of off, and the doctor just kept pushing and pushing. Something's not right. Doctor after doctor. So I went quite a while, really, just living normally.
And you were thinking, oh, guys, there's nothing here. Come on, you're looking for nothing.
That's exactly what I thought. And I honestly thought I would never get to the point where I got sick. I'd get a transplant before that ever happened.
Really?
But that didn't happen.
So what was, I mean, remember the day when they said, this is what you have and this is what it's going to mean? You will eventually, you're going to need a liver transplant? You remember that day?
Oh, I remember that day, and I was confused because they said it's PBC, and I came home and said to Tom, I don't know, they told me I have some kind of liver disease, and I'm saying PBC, and I knew that wasn't right, but I was so mixed up and didn't really know exactly what I had, but I knew that they're saying you'll need a liver transplant. Yeah. It didn't really
phase
you. It didn't sink in.
No.
You know, we were, because I felt well. Yeah. I didn't feel sick.
What were the first signs of not feeling well?
Extreme itchiness.
Really?
Under the skin, not just surface, not like a mosquito bite. It was just all the toxins coming.
To the surface.
To the surface. Oh, it was awful. Thought I was going crazy.
That would just be bizarre.
It was. Yeah. But I had good medication.
My wife and I did a liver cleanse diet once. Because I'm not into these fad things, but that one kind of made sense because I know the liver is a filtration system, and, you know, you got to clean out every other filter. Why wouldn't you clean out your liver, right?
Right.
I didn't enjoy doing the liver cleanse, but but what you're saying is the toxins that the liver was filtering were being released into your system, and then came to the surface and triggered this itch feeling below the epidermal layer.
That's right. It was bizarre. But we tried many medications, and I finally found one that worked. So
okay. Were there other developments?
I'm trying to think. Oh, osteoporosis. Okay. You can get that from it.
But what happened to you other than the itchy skin? Anything else?
Not for a long, long time. No, not really. I started getting little fatty cells under my eyes. Jaundice. I became extremely jaundiced. I was almost so yellow, I was almost green. And pretty much that was it. I was actually very fortunate. Extreme fatigue, that was probably the second thing that I suffered from. But you just keep going. What can you do?
Yeah. How bad did it get? What was the worst point?
The worst was just before Christmas.
Explain that to us. What did, you know?
I honestly didn't think I'd see Christmas.
Really?
I was so sick.
Vomiting or?
No, just no energy, no appetite. I couldn't walk on my own. I had to use a stick to walk around. And it just, it ended up that I had pneumonia, but I didn't know it. And I kept going to the hospital, and they'd say, oh, there's a bit of fluid. I couldn't sleep in my bed. I'm sleeping in a lazy boy chair. It was just, it was very frustrating because I wanted to go to my bed and pull up my blanket and just cuddle in, you know. It's like, but it didn't, it was a couple of months since that had happened. Mm-hmm. It was very trying. And I wanted to be up about Christmas, and I tried to do my shopping. I didn't get that done, so everyone got money. Yay.
It was probably their best Christmas.
That's right.
Everybody wants cash. Okay, so spiritually, what's going on with you? Because you're both Jesus people, as I understand.
Yes.
So you'd be crying out to God, I would imagine, saying, you know, heal me. I'm sure you went through the whole heal me prayers, did you not?
Oh, for sure. And
Some people don't do that. I was talking to someone the other day, and I said, well, have you asked God to heal you? And they said, no. And really, the thinking is, look, there's people way worse off than I am. I don't deserve, you know, I mean, if God wants to, he knows, sure, I'd like to be healed, but I haven't actually asked.
Oh, no, I asked. I asked, and I just asked him to be with me always. You know, just whatever your plan is, your plan. I'm ready for whatever the final decision is, but really, I'd like to stick around, you know.
Yeah.
I'd like to be with my husband and my children and my grandchildren, but I had so much support. It was just incredible.
Really?
And it still blows me away. That
Tom, you'd be quite aware of the support then as well, wouldn't you?
The church and everything, and yeah, all our friends. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Pretty amazing.
Oh yeah. Just
unbelievable.
It's just the whole journey is amazing. That's all I can say.
Pat, this is a bit of a harsh question, fairly direct. So unlike me. were you ready to die?
Yes, I was.
Really?
Yes, I was. I was ready to die. And I think my family knew it. I was still going to fight, but I was ready, if that was God's will. I was ready. I wasn't the least bit afraid.
That's pretty interesting.
I wasn't the least bit afraid. I just, I don't know if it was because I was so sick and was just surprised at it or what it was, but I was not afraid.
Who got the phone call or who got the notification about the liver being available for transplant? Was it you, Tom?
I called London in the morning because when she went in the hospital, usually we call, I call, because the hospital's supposed to call and let them know, but they don't always.
So hold on. Are you saying that you had to go to hospital because you were very sick?
Yes.
Sunday night.
All right. And you've been to hospital before?
Oh, many.
Right. So every time you go to hospital, you phone who?
London, the transplant coordinator there.
To say, we're back in hospital. It's not doing well. Please let us know if
then
something happens.
She moves up the list.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
Severity. She was number one on the list from February this year, but if you're not sick, you're not really number one.
Oh, really?
The sickest.
Yeah, sure.
Sickest.
Sure,
somebody's
sure,
sicker
that
than
makes
you.
Sense.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you know,
so
that
I called her.
So you called and said, we're back in the hospital again, just like you normally do.
That was 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
And I said they were going to drain some fluid from around her lung. And she said, thanks for calling, and I'll be on it. And 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I was talking to some friends of ours, and I heard the phone in the background, like the incoming call. And I said, I'll call you back, because I thought it was the hospital. And it was the coordinator from London says, you're not going to believe this, but we have a donor. And we're already making arrangements to get Pat to London by ambulance. It was that quick.
Wow. Your head must have just been spinning, Tom.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I didn't have time to spin. It was like, oh, good. This is good.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just...
And the funny thing was, I heard the call come through to the nurse's desk, and they said, there's a donor for Patricia Kostrich. We have to make arrangements to get her to
London.
You
heard that?
No one came and told me. No one came in and told me. I heard the call. I heard the nurses.
Did you think, oh, I must have been hallucinating or something?
I didn't. You know what? I didn't really even think anything.
No, too sick?
I was too sick at that stage. And I thought, I heard the call and I'm thinking, that's my name. But that's really as far as it went.
And who came into your room? Who was the first person who came in and let the cat out of the bag? Do you remember? Maybe you don't remember.
My goodness, I don't remember.
But they would have come in and said, all right, we're moving you, and you've got to go, and here you've got to, what, from Hamilton Hospital over to London, basically,
yes,
right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, I think the first person I remember was our best friend's daughter is a paramedic.
Right.
And she obviously knew that I'd got the call because Tom had called his buddy.
Yeah.
And she called in and said, I want that trip. So she came into my room with her partner, their stretcher, and
really?
She took me to London.
You can request.
No, you can. She did because she works there.
Oh,
she
that's
said,
funny.
I want that shift. I want that. So it was like, wow. It was like everything just.
Okay. Well, if you've just tuned in, folks, we are chatting with Tom and Pat Kostrich. That's how you say your last name, Kostrich. And again, during our Christmas special last month, we did a segment called Prayer Request. What miracle do you need this Christmas? And boy, did these folks get one.
Mm-hmm.
The liver transplant finally came through. And I mean, this is a genuine bona fide miracle.
It was.
Really.
And it is.
Okay. The other side of the story, though, is that someone had to die so that you lived.
That's right.
And do you know the backstory? Do they tell you that stuff? You know, it's all privacy.
It's all private.
Or private.
Now, I will be able to send a letter through London, through the hospital.
So if you want to initiate contact mm-hmm. with the family or whatever, next of kin, you can send a letter through a neutral party and they'll pass the letter over.
That's correct.
And are you going to do that?
Yes, I am, but I just think it's too soon.
Yeah.
I think they need time. And, I mean, they've done a wonderful thing. I mean, what more could you give someone than the gift of life? But
so you don't know anything? What about non-identifying information?
Sarnia.
We know it Sarnia. Came from Sarnia.
That's all.
And it would have to be somebody who wasn't on death row for quite a while, someone who hasn't been drugged up for a long time, whose body hasn't deteriorated enough. So, my mind immediately goes to Google. News reports, Sarnia, accidents.
Yeah.
Didn't do it.
I don't want to do that.
I'm too curious.
Well, you know what? I have to admit I'm curious as well because it had to be, one, the right blood type.
Yeah.
The right size. It had to be someone of my size.
Really? I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
So, obviously, I'm thinking either it's a younger person.
Yeah.
Because I'm not that big.
No.
Or it's a lady, female, and but I could be totally off, and I don't care where it came from. I'm just so thankful for it that, you know, I think I told you I already spent a lot of time very emotional about this part of it, but I think I got over that now, and I am just so grateful, and all you can give someone is the gift of life. You know, talk to your family about it, because your decision is not the final decision. it's up to your family what happens.
Yeah, we talked about this issue on our show a few weeks ago, and I think we had a caller that said, I was all for signing the donor card until I have a friend of mine who's in the medical profession who has told me numerous times that she has witnessed the medical people pressuring the family to let the person die so that they can harvest the organs.
Oh.
And somebody else said that signing the donor card is not really the be-all and end-all. It's about giving a letter of consent to your next of kin saying, this is what I request, et cetera, et cetera. I want, you know, my wife to make the final decision or so. I don't know, mm-hmm. those sorts of things.
Yeah,
do you have any advice for the organ donating scenario to people out there? What do you say to them?
I just say inform your family of what you want, because
right.
the person who makes the final decision is the one who says, yes, I'd like their organs to be donated, or no, just leave it as is.
Hmm.
I mean, it's not the person who has passed away. It's not their decision, really. You just have to let them know what you want.
When are you out of the water? When are you out of the woods? When is it clear? When do we know that the liver has taken and you're fine? Now? Do they know now?
It's working properly,
it's
according
working.
To the numbers.
It's
right.
Like all my blood work is perfect. When I went on Wednesday to London, he said, what can I say? I said, just say it's good. He goes, oh, it's good. It's good. He said, your blood work is just... He said, what can I say?
Do you... Now, this is just me as an outsider. I've never met you before. I don't know anything about you folks. You still seem to be a little jaundiced. Is that...
Yes.
Is that, am I seeing things right?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yes, I am.
That will be an indicator of whether the liver is working when that clears up totally?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
It takes a while.
Oh, yeah. He said it'll take probably another 6 weeks because my eyes were very yellow.
Yeah.
Very yellow.
They were almost green.
Wow.
Really?
And you can see they're pretty white.
Well,
I got to ask you, from a lady's point of view, you seem to be a very classy. You remind me of this, not age wise, but my mom.
I could probably be your mom.
Yeah, probably, because I'm so young.
Yeah.
But no, you have a class about you. It seems like you take care of yourself. You just seem to be a very together lady, and with. You're attractive, and so with this, Tom's nodding his head. He's going, yeah, baby.
Yeah, I have to live with her.
But when the discoloration begins from the jaundice, that must be hard for you. It's like the ladies with cancer losing the hair or losing a breast from breast cancer. I mean, all of these things...
Wear yellow, you can't wear lime green, you
yeah.
know, all the orange in colors.
But just
can't
even
wear.
Going out in public and what people think or say, because I don't know.
Exactly right.
How
it
did
is.
You handle all that?
Well, you know, it took a long time before I realized I was actually yellow.
Because
you know,
it was a slow process of change.
Because, yeah.
It looked more tan.
I was
for
in
a
the
while.
Hospital and I was in the shower and there was a big mirror and I looked and I thought, who is that? I thought there was someone in there with me. I was like, well, that's me. Ooh.
Wow.
But it's, well, my grandson, the oldest one, he will be 12. He said, we'd taken them golfing. He said, Nana, why are your eyes so yellow? And the youngest one piped up and said, Nathan, they're so yellow because they're old, you know. She's had them since she was born.
That's good. The kids say.
That was just last summer.
Oh, like, man.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Yeah. So, Tom, as a husband, there must have been a sense of helplessness go through you. I can't do a thing about this. I want my wife to be better, yet this is out of my control. You know, there's a male thing that kicks in where we want to protect and support and care and nurture, and yet you couldn't do a thing about
this.
Yeah,
you want to help, but you don't know what you can do now.
Nothing.
It's just nothing. So if you want to feed her and she's not eating, the last week there, she took a teaspoon of rice and that was it. She said she was full, and it's like, you can't live like that, and that was it. And what do? She just doesn't feel like anything.
But a little birdie told me that you're the real hero here because you've really had to double up on things and had to go full time and just your hour, burning the candle at both ends kind of stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. I just, I don't know. I really don't have anything to say here. I don't think there's a question other than, like, good on you. Like, way to go. Way to not quit. Thanks. Way to step up to the plate.
Oh, he sure did.
Yeah, my dad was in the hospital for 2 months.
During this?
During this.
Yes.
October, November. And Pat went in, I think, 2-3 times at the same time. He was on the third floor of Mac, and she was in ICU. So I was going up and down, up and down. And then he got moved to Henderson, so when she was in Mac, I had to go between two hospitals.
Yeah.
But he's getting better. He's back home cooking on his own and getting up.
He's done very well.
Everybody's home.
Everyone's
home. And it's great.
What did this whole thing do to you, Tom? Because you know, you strike me as a guy who has a massive heart. I'm sure you're a jerk sometimes. But.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, more than you expect.
Okay.
No comment. Well,
what has this done to you?
It's made me believe in a lot of things. Friends, family, God. It's helped.
And miracles.
It's amazing how everybody came together and helped us out.
It's incredible.
Especially the family. Yeah.
What overwhelms you the most when you think about this whole process, this whole journey that you've been through?
Actually, the thing that I saw the most was Pat sick on December 22nd. And by the afternoon when she came out of the operation, and 40 minutes after the operation, she was in ICU and I got to see her. And she looked well. She was a million tubes coming out of her, but she looked well. It was like sick and then better. It was like unbelievable. You could just see it right away. Even the tips of her fingers were already pink and her toes. It was, like, amazing.
That's neat. Do you remember phoning in that day?
Yeah. I was sitting in my van waiting to punch out of work. And I'm thinking, I don't do this. I don't do this kind of stuff.
Well, you don't do what? You don't phone talk shows?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's like, and then something said, do it. And I did it. And the phone rang, and I'm going, uh-oh. Phone's ringing.
I got through.
Yeah. Oh, no. Now what do I say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, go ahead.
No, I just feel so blessed and just overwhelmed at what has happened. It just came so close, and yet.
Yeah. Well, even the next day at church, Pat stayed home, and I went, and this lady came up to me and said, I'm still praying for Pat to get that Christmas present we want her to get. Mm-hmm. That was the Sunday, and Monday took her into the hospital, and Tuesday she gets a call.
See, like, I got to admit, I'm a little pessimistic when it comes to a lot of things, but when it comes to prayer, I wonder, you know, God's got things under control. How much are we going to really move him with our begging and pleading? And I've heard so many stories of people begging and pleading and nothing happening, so what's the difference? And, you know, and yet we're still commanded to pray without ceasing. Yeah. Okay, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more for our benefit, our communication with him, et cetera, et cetera. But this story encourages me as well, as I'm sure it does everybody. But I keep thinking, you phone into a radio show, and there's supposed to be 100,000 people listening to this show, and so we ask 100,000 people to pray, and I'm sure, maybe 50,000 of them pray. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's being the jerk that I am. 50,000 people praying that you get a liver transplant. If that doesn't move the hand of God, I don't know, you know? I'm still trying to figure out the whole prayer thing. Corporate prayer, individual prayer, moving the hand of God, the free will of man versus the, what's written, what's already moving forward.
Do you think we'll ever understand it?
I don't think
so.
There's a reason only 10% of our brain works.
Well, sometimes what you pray for, you don't always get because that's not what's supposed to be anyway. Like my mom died a couple of years ago of breast cancer. And it was the same thing. I think she got a miracle because she got sick. But she went fast, and she had no pain. And it had gone to her liver. It was in her bones and her liver, and she had no pain up to the day she died.
None.
So to me, that was a miracle, too.
We thought that was a miracle.
I mean, we didn't get her to stay, but still.
That's her time.
You ask for something, but you might get something.
Okay. So maybe you can, I'll start with you, Pat, with this one. I'll ask you the same question of both of you. What have you learned about yourself and about God spiritually, what has changed in you throughout this journey? Pat?
It's a very good question. I feel that I can put all my faith in God, that I really have no control over the situations that are happening, that He has already planned what is going to happen to us. There's already a plan for you. And I don't think I could have got through this without believing in Him and handing everything to Him. I really don't think I could have gone through it at all. And it just makes me want to spread the word to other people. That's all. I just want to be, and I want to be closer to my church family, if you want to call it that, and just spread the news. What else can we do? Hmm. What else can we do?
Okay. All right. Tom?
Yeah. I feel the same way about it. And
You can't just say ditto.
I can.
True. You can.
No, it's just from what I've seen, what's happened, and it's just amazing, like everything that's fallen into place, it just doesn't happen like that. Things don't just fall into place perfectly. Like even people we met at church, her brother actually turned out to be one of the transplant doctors in London. And
not mine.
Not hers.
Oh, okay.
But, and her blood type is the same as Pat's, B positive. It's a rare blood type. And just little things like that, you just... It's amazing why did we get to meet these people and all this thing. It just doesn't happen unless it's planned to happen by something.
Yeah.
And we know who that is.
Well, I hope that your story impacts the family of the donor in such a way that they push in towards God somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm actually very anxious to send them a letter or something, but I know I have to give them some time because I'm still overwhelmed myself.
Sure.
So
yeah.
It's just been a month. Yeah. So, you know, things are moving quickly.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
And we could end up finding out who they are in the end. It's up to them if they want to reply back and say, yes, we'd like to.
Right.
That could end up being a possibility too. Mm.
Well, it's quite a story. It really is. It's just quite a story, and I had to have you in. And
we're happy to be here. It just
you're happy to be anywhere.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. I look at her every day and go, wow, she's back to her normal health again.
Yeah. It's How nice. Long have you been married?
35 years.
Years.
Yeah. I think, let's see.
When he gets up that.
Yeah. You just round off.
Yeah, round it off. Let's count the roses.
Well, congratulations on your marriage. Congratulations on this successful surgery.
Thank you.
And it'll be interesting to see how God uses this further, I guess, really.
That's my that's my thought as well. I'm wondering what doors are being opened for me.
All right, folks. Well, that has been our journey segment for the day. Again, Tom and Pat Costridge, an incredible story. For those of you out there that say, I only talk about negative stuff, there you go. Nice positive story for you. When we come back, we are going to be chatting with Frank Schaefer. Frank is the author of Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. It's quite a story. He is, of course, the son of Dr. Francis Schaefer. And I'm anxiously looking forward to this interview with Frank because he's got quite an opinion on a variety of things. And then later in the show, does swearing offend you, or are you one of those cool Christians who swears every once in a while yourself? And then we're going to lighten up the end of the show with some comedy clips. Just make you laugh and smile at the end of the day. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.